Welcome back to Bench Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast where we get into the builds, the gear, and the people actually out there doing the work. And tonight's episode, it's a little different. Instead of focusing on one builder, we're stepping into the team side of the hobby. I'm joined by Chris Nance, Greg Burke with the NorCal Ghostbusters. And these guys aren't just building packs. They're putting them on a shelf. They're out wearing them, maintaining them, representing the community at events. So we're going to get into what that exactly looks like, but not just building something that looks good. No, they're building something that works. It holds up. It can survive real world use. And we'll talk about the packs, uniforms, electronics, the stuff that matters, the stuff that doesn't, and yeah, why the community can get a little intense when it comes to accuracy. Chris, Greg, welcome to Bench Tested.
Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Charlie. Happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad that you guys are here. I've seen your videos on YouTube. I've seen you and have played with you in Spirits Unleashed unknowingly. but yeah, so you guys are out there. You're doing exactly everything I said, but you're building it, and a lot of times from scratch. And that's actually happening in your most recent build I've seen on YouTube. So I want to get into that. When you're building for actual use at events, what breaks first? Is it the stuff that no one thinks about, or the stuff you were like, something's going to happen to that?
So, because your Alice paper was really loose that one show.
Yeah, well, that wasn't even at the event. So I actually have never had anything break on me during an event.
Oh, good.
It has always been from like pre-event tinkering has been my problem.
I think I had that same problem too.
The wand on the HasLab at an event hooked on like a door, and I pulled the body of my HasLab wand kind of off the screws.
Oh no!
Yeah, you split it right down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, luckily we popped it back in and rescrewed. Everything was okie dokie.
Oh my god, was that a convention?
Was that the Ghostbuster showing in Petaluma?
No, was it in Petaluma or was it at the one in at the Alamo Draft House?
No, it wasn't the Draft House. That was Petaluma. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So to make that even more difficult, it wasn't like it was at a con where they have the group there that helps you fix your costumes or repair stuff on site.
Yeah. No, I am the cosplay repair station.
See, somebody's got to be. So why not you?
Yeah.
So what is the biggest difference between a display build and a field build in your experience?
Besides weight is probably the biggest, like most obvious difference, but also just like the actual parts quality that you're working with. You know, when I met Greg, he had just bought one of the No One Designs packs, and that thing is decent. But it's made from a vacuform shell, and compared to something like a fiberglass shell or even like the plastic, the cast plastic, that the HasLab has, like, there's not as much weight, there's not as much fidelity to it. So it's not a super obvious thing unless you're standing right next to a hero pack, right? Like,
yeah. That, I think, is my end goal, is to have an actual fiberglass shell pack. Because right now, I'm running the Q-Pack. I love it. It's doing me great. I think it's doing a lot of people great. Actually, if it weren't for that project and what Mark and the whole team out there and Q were able to do and create that, a lot of people wouldn't even have a proton pack. And you know, I mean, come on. You can't be a buster without a proton pack, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would argue that the uniform is really where you want to start, but yeah, no, exactly. And not just the Q pack, but like the Spirit pack. I don't know how long you've been a part. Yeah. I don't know how long you've been a part of the community, Charlie, but like I was at FanFest back in 2019, and the majority of packs that people had there were Spirit packs. And that was back when it was the 80% or only.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you can, and that's one that you can really tell a big difference from, especially when you compare it to, you know, their newest one, which is their life-size Spirit pack. And that thing has, honestly, it's done, I think, wonders for the community outside of like Hasbro, because that's kind of an upper level tier. But if you're looking at to get into it, yeah, you got the Spirit pack and it's readily available. And now you've got new competition that's entered the market. That looks very good, which is the fun.com pack, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the Halloween costumes.
Halloweencostumes.com, fun.com. Yeah.
Yeah, those are definitely another really great like entry level pack if you're just looking to like get started on building and everything. When I started back in 2016, it was Vacuform or fiberglass shell, and those were the only options. Wow. And either way, you're looking at a couple hundred bucks just for the shell. Whereas like, yeah, for that same cost, like you can get the pack plus, you know, the first couple of mods that you want to get for
it. Right. Yeah, no, I mean, there are so many different places that you can go in that and you can start. What is the one, if somebody is just now saying, okay, look, I'm, you know, Halloween will be here before you know it. Right now is the perfect time to get out there and to get a pack maybe before, you know, it, maybe they run out at your local Spirit. You can get it online. What should my first mod be? What would you recommend to somebody?
Oh, God. That depends entirely on which pack you choose as your entry level.
There are options.
Yeah.
So let's say if you were going with, let's say people were on a budget, right? Maybe they went for like the 80% Spirit pack or the deluxe, I think. Is that what they call it?
I think the deluxe is the life size, isn't it? In any event, if you're looking at just like the scaled down Spirit, and I don't know if he still offers it, but at least our circa, what was that, 2019 when FanFest happened, Charlesworth Dynamics has a really nice all-in-one like upgrade kit for the Spirit pack. And that just, you know, has like an upgraded brass rod for your ion arm and a couple of different things. I don't recall off the top of my head, but that would really be like a good, like solid starting place if you're just like trying to get some simple mods going.
Okay. So what is the one upgrade or mod that made a bigger real world difference than maybe you expected?
Gosh. I mean, I would have to give that to the HasLab, to be honest. Especially having seen it in person, the GP Star stuff for the HasLab is really like, it's uncanny how much of a splash Michael's made in the community with that.
Yeah, and I just had a great conversation with him, and he went into some detail on stuff that, you know, with the GP Star 2 system that's out. I mean, it's incredible what it can do. It's going to be even more amazing when you see what it will do. What's the best thing about it that you're kind of looking forward to seeing how it blossoms?
I think the interactivity that he was talking about is really like what has me most excited, to the point that I'm genuinely considering ordering some of the GP Star 2 boards for Greg's HasLab.
Yeah.
We did a how-to, year and a half, 2 years ago now, on installing the original GP Star kit into the HasLab, and we put that in Greg's HasLab. And then we really got started on doing the Hero how-to stuff. And the Greg's pack is done. You've probably seen some pictures on Facebook and whatnot now. But Greg has a full Hero, but that's built with the new GB Fans kit.
Oh, okay.
And that's a really, you know, fun little kit. It's very easy to install, which is, I think, why it was my preference for a really long time. But just having seen all of the options and abilities that the GP Star kits have, especially going forward with the new features being added and the more interactive elements being added and everything, like that's got me very, very excited.
Yeah.
Also, like AJ's stuff on GB Fans Shop is like much more reasonably priced. Like the GB Star, you're paying for quality with Michael's stuff. The stuff on AJ's site is much. You get the pack board, I think, is like $60, or the wand.
Yeah, something like that.
It's like really reasonable. Like if you need it, but it's like I said, it's very basic, but great entry level, great infection vector if you're looking to get into electronics for the first time.
Yeah, and I think that can be kind of daunting for a lot of people because, you know, let's be honest, GP Star is not a good first person. It's great, but it's not for somebody who is maybe a novice to electronics, maybe kind of intimidated by it. What would you recommend for somebody in that situation?
Oh, definitely the GB Fans kit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, do you still have to take out the board, or does it incorporate the board with the Hasbro wand?
Well, with GB Fans, it's an all-in-one kit, so it's not like something that you can sort of plug into the HasLab one-to-one like GP Star can. So if you were to install it into a HasLab pack, you would have to gut everything out and then install it yourself. And that's definitely the biggest hurdle to applying it that way. But for something like a Spirit pack or something like that, like, they're a great little kit.
So when it comes to electronics, right, your philosophy, and again, you kind of answer this in a way, but do you go as complex as possible, or do you try to keep it as simple and reliable? What's the balance there?
I am a big fan of simple and reliable, personally. I'm not a big electronics guy myself. There's a lot that I just don't know, so I end up outsourcing knowledge to friends that we have. But it's really just all dependent on what you're trying to get out of it. So, like, even if you're doing a full hero build, like Greg's hero pack, it's a GB2 pack. It's not one of the newer designs. It's not an Afterlife or a Frozen Empire pack at all. So we went with GB Fan specifically because that covers all of his bases. Like, that's all he needs. He doesn't really need all the extra bells and whistles or the alternate modes and the alternate movie modes and all of that. But if you are specifically building like a Frozen Empire pack or something like that, then, like, yes, absolutely go for something like GP Star. Or if you're trying to stick with like a Spirit pack, there are things like the Spirit Bro, which I believe is made to, I believe it's made to work with the Ninja Tunes kit. So it kind of acts as like an adapter for the Spirit pack, using Ninja Tunes as sort of its driver, if I recall correctly.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. So that's, again, that sounds like a great upgrade for somebody who may be new to this, and that just allows them that better opportunity to have that feel like, you know what, this is mine. I've got it, and it's working, and it talks, and it does everything but walk. That's where they can get started. That's a good starting point, you'd think.
It's been a lot easier these last, I would say, like 4 or 5 years. A lot of new stuff has been released that makes this whole process kind of, Chris uses this all the time, and so I would say it all the time, plug and play, which is like no soldering, just JSTs to JSTs, maybe a little hot gluing. Like, it's gotten incredibly easier to get started on this, where, Chris, when you were starting to build your pack, it was forms and pictures, and it was a lot, and you had to get parts from multiple different people, like a lot more than you have to do now. There wasn't a one-stop shop. Well, GB Fans, I guess, but there's a lot of stuff you had to commission, right? Like, it was a lot harder to do it 10 years ago.
Yeah. So when it comes to the pack itself, obviously the electronics are the electronics. They're not going to weigh a whole lot, but, you know, you put speakers in, that's going to bump it up. How much does weight and comfort factor into the builds once you're wearing this stuff for hours?
Oh, not at all. you know, my first hero build is about 30 pounds.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, it's honestly not that bad. Especially when you bear in mind, Army soldiers carry up to like 90 plus pound loads, and they were using the same backpack frame that we're using. So, like, if they can do it, we can do it. But also, like, a majority, like you kind of touched on this, a majority of that weight is batteries and speakers. And if you're really, really worried about, like, kind of slimming that down, there are ways that you can sort of set things up so as to make it as easy for you as possible. So, like, you don't need to have 2 6,000 mAh talent cell batteries. You can have one and have your wiring set up to hot swap. So you just, I ran my battery down. Well, I have an extra battery in my bag. I just swap that battery in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now I assume that's probably, you know, looking at my pack, for example, that's probably not as easy to do, because I'd have to throw it down. Well, not, you know, throw it down, but, you know, put it down, screw out the sides of the bolts, take it out, you know. How would somebody go about doing that if they had, say, your pack, for example? You mentioned the hero pack that Greg has. Is there a slot that you put in when you were building this and designed it to where it would be easy to hot swap that out?
Yes, actually. So I very specifically, I put a hole in the motherboard pretty close to like the high center, so that you can, and then the talent cell just Velcros onto the motherboard behind the Alice frame.
Oh, okay.
And then that way we've just got a barrel plug. And you just unplug the barrel plug and slap a fresh battery on there and plug it back in and turn it on.
That's perfect, man. That's ingenious. And that's the little things that I think some people just kind of glaze over because they're so excited to just get everything in there and they want to turn it on and they want to go to events and not think about anything else. But when it gets down to it, if you're in an event for a long day, and again, something like that happens, your battery runs down because maybe there's a bunch of kids who want to see you, you know, wrangle a ghost in, you know, something like that. Yeah, that's going to run your battery down real quick.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, that even extends to beyond the proton pack and electronics too. Like, you know, if you look at pictures of me in uniform, I have a knee pad that I wear, and that's literally just because I did a street fair years and years and years ago. And it's always been my standard practice when I take pictures with kids, I take a knee. And that makes it easier for the parents to get us all framed up in one picture, right? But you're out at a street fair and you're taking a knee with a 30-pound proton pack on. Yeah. That knee is on concrete, you know?
Yeah.
So I wear it. I have a knee pad. You know, I just have a hard cap knee pad. I put caution striping on it with regular spray paint, nothing fancy. But it makes my life so much easier when I'm taking pictures with kids.
Yeah. No,
Chris also has that trap kit he made, the thigh trap kit, Chris.
Yeah, the drop leg holster for my trap.
That thing's pretty rad too.
That's cool. So you kind of have a tactical, you know, look to you then.
Not exactly tactical. It kind of comes more across as like repurposed equipment more than anything, I would argue. I try to shy away from the tactical look with the cosplay as a rule, just because we're supposed to look like exterminators, not like like, you know,
not like you're about to go in guns blazing, right?
Exactly.
One of our best viewed videos on the site is how to do the drop leg attachment, which is kind of, it just takes the trap weight off your belt and onto your leg, basically just moves it around a little bit.
Is it a metal piece, or I assume that there are metal pieces to it, or is it just kind of a brace strap maybe?
No, so it actually I use a sort of cheapy, and anybody listening who does any paintballing is going to know this brand immediately. I use a Blackhawk drop leg platform is what it's called. And it's just like a little, you know, drop leg holster platform thing. But it's just mole. You know, it's just that that mole strapping on it, on the face. And then I use zip ties and Velcro strapping to just put the regular belt trap holster on there. And then that's what holds my trap for me.
That's awesome. I love it. See, that's just those things that you just don't think about until you get to it. And you're like, man, that's a clever idea. I like that. Have you ever had to dial a build back because it was too complicated or too fragile that you found out later in the process?
Oh, yeah. In fact, it's pretty much a regular thing. We don't really show this on camera too much, but like very often we will get to a point where I sort of realize standing at the workbench on camera, like, okay, the approach that I have in mind is not going to work. So we have to change this up. We have to change how we're going to do this. That's sort of I'm sure Greg probably has it in his folder somewhere on his computer from editing it all. But, you know, that's the stuff that ends up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. See, I would wonder, like, how in detail do you have to get before you are like, you know, this is too much. I think we might have gone overboard here. Do you say that often?
Oh, the fucking wand. The wand.
It's the wand, yeah.
That damn wand. It's just there's no space in that damn thing. And I have the camera over Chris, and Chris is trying to, like, desolder things or rewire them again or use the screw terminals. And, like, and you're working with, like, 2-millimeter wire. It's a pain in the butt. Huge pain.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I can imagine. Dude, you're breathing on me. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get the shot.
Basically, trying to get him to do it right. Yeah, trying to get him not get in his way, let him work.
So I think every time that we've done a wand build on camera, there's been complications that come up in the process of filming it that, like, we end up taking probably 2 or 3 times as long as we thought we were going to take.
And you don't see it either because we edited it out, so it looks first try, flawless. First try. Yeah. That's our joke on set. It's first try. Did it. Done.
And so many people are like, God, how did they do that? That's so perfect.
How did they so flawlessly? Yeah.
So how do you approach maintenance? Are you constantly tweaking your pack, or are you trying to lock in a final version?
I generally have a distinct final place that I want to end up at. And, you know, I think most people who have done, especially the hero quality pack builds, most people will tell you, like, oh, well, a proton pack is never done. And that's somewhat true. There's always one part or one piece that you just couldn't get your hands on in the quality or the type that you wanted. And that ends up being your sort of holy grail item. You know, for a second there, we actually have some friends. We actually have a specific friend who they had been hunting for the Max Factory wand grips for years.
Oh, yeah.
Could not get his hands on it for the life of him. And so when Greg and I got to work with Aaron and start doing the Max Factory build videos, I specifically was like, Greg, we need three sets of grips, not two, because we're getting one for him.
That's awesome. So you were able to come through.
Yeah.
That's great. So here's something I want to talk about. And you kind of mentioned this earlier, uniforms. I want to talk uniforms. What is the one detail that instantly makes a suit look right, even if everything else isn't perfect?
Patch and color.
Patch and color. Yeah.
Yep. Color of the suit and the patch, the no-ghost patch you have. Just don't get it on Amazon, please. Get it anywhere else.
Please.
Oh my God. Yeah, there are so many of those no-ghost patches on Amazon that I personally have never bought one because I've, you know, being in the community, you know what's right. You know where to go.
Yeah, the black border around it is too small and there's a black line around it. Please God, help me fix it.
Just go to GB Fans, please. well, and you know, the advice that I give for the uniform most often to people is if you're going to be working with a franchise group, talk to your franchise group and coordinate with them on what brand of flight suit they all wear. Because nothing makes you stand out in terms of uniform more than having everybody's using a TruSpec and you've got a proper or you've got a Rothko, and the color grade on those fabrics is so different when they're next to each other.
Oh, man.
See, it kind of goes down the list, like what Chris said. If he has the Rothko, I think I have a TruSpec, and then there's a third one that everyone gets on Amazon that's like super the wrong color, and it just looks really. You can see it in pictures, like who bought
the Rothko.
No, there's who bought what where, basically based on the shade of khaki. What is which flight suit? You know,
guess
basically
the flight
is what
suit.
You can tell.
Yeah, that'd be a fun game, actually. That'd be a fun drinking game, actually. Now that I think
about
it. So let me ask you this. You guys did an interview with Indy Magnoli, and I thought it was great to get into the detail and to watch you guys have that conversation with him. Myself, I just purchased one of those suits. A lot of people are starting to get wind of these suits and what they're able to provide. Where do you think that stands in the lineup next to a TruSpec or a proper or any of these others that they could get off Amazon?
I mean, arguably, Indies are always going to be just that little bit more accurate. If we're talking fabric, it's always going to be just that little bit more accurate than anybody else, just because he has the proper ripstop and herringbone fabrics that are used on the various types, like the different generations of screen-used flight suits.
Yeah.
And that, it's such a subtle difference, but once you know it, it really stands out.
Yeah, that's one that I'm looking forward to getting. And see, I tried one of the ones off Amazon. I tried those, and I just, for some reason, I was born with this long torso. And every time I stand up in it, I got the biggest wedgie in the world, and I can't. It just won't work. And so there are people out there who are trying to maybe find something that fits them, and in this case, it's custom. What are your recommendations for somebody who may be in a situation like that but may not have the Magnoli money?
Well, it's honestly my recommendation for a first-timer flight suit is always go on eBay and look up CWU 27/P, and that is the original military flight suit that they basically they based the original flight suits off of. That's the pattern. And that's actually what I use is a Nomex, which is not actually the brand. It's the fabric, that the type of fire retardant fabric that they use for it.
Okay.
But the sizing on those is based on two things. It's your chest measurement and then short, regular, long. And that's it. Those are the two measurements that you have to know. Well, so if you know that you're very tall and you have a long torso, like, get a long. If you know that you're about average, get a regular. If you know that you're kind of a smaller guy, get the short.
Okay, yeah. See, that's something that I think a lot of people maybe overlook, is eBay being an option. Because, yeah, you can get pretty damn close to an accurate flight suit off there.
And true, quite often, if you're a big guy, it's tough. Like, if you're a tall guy or a big guy, it's tough to find the right type of flight suit. You're going to be short somewhere. Chest, arms, legs, waist.
Yeah. And you got to see, and that's the other thing with me is I'm 6'3". I'm built like a lineman, you know? So
yeah.
You know, something like that. Yeah. It can be a little frustrating. What is the one detail that people obsess over that most of the public would never notice?
Oh, the boots.
Patch. The patch?
I would say it's the boots.
The boots.
Oh, the boots. Oh, that's right. Yes, yeah. The boots.
So where did you guys... Let's start there. Where did you get your patch?
GB fans.
GB fans.
Okay. And how does that compare to, well, dare I say, an Amazon patch, but any of the other sellers that we come across in the community?
Just consistency, I'd guess. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when I wanted to make sure my no-ghost patch matched Chris's no-ghost patch, so we all have the same no-ghost patch, right? So there's no... kind of shiny variant. I know some of the patches on Amazon can be like a little shinier than normal.
Oh yeah.
And then we didn't even have to I got a patch. I have a Magnolia RGB suit, and the patch that came with it was like very felty, and it was very interesting just to see the different kind of design of that one.
It's much closer to like screen used.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to like Ghostbusters 1 and you look at the no ghost patches on their flight suits, like the white fabric for the ghost is more of a felty fabric. There's some wonk on Moogly's hands. It's not as clean as the more recent movies or like what you get on GB fans. GB fans is definitely much more of an idealized version of the patch.
Okay. So not the, I guess what, you know, some creators who do make these patches call them, like, there's the Venkman patch or the Spangler patch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are like that, because those are replicated from the films themselves. Like, exactly. So, like, that's the screen use. And then there's idealized, which looks better, but doesn't match the screen art. Like, it's because those things were all handmade. So all of them are a little bit different. Those are then now you get into like the reads of like the details. Chris loves that. He's been dragging me more and more farther into the reads the last 3 years.
Yeah,
that's
something too that I think a lot of people maybe don't get is, you know, it is the Moogly material, we'll call it, on the patch. You mentioned it being like a felt material, but when you look at, say, GB2 1989, that one, the color from the first one was more white. This one in 2, it was more of an off-white.
Yeah. Well, and some of that is weathering by the costumers for the film.
Yeah, and that's actually perfect timing, because that was going to bring me to my next question. When it comes to your suit, is there a happy medium when it comes to weathering? I know it's, you know, people have different opinions of it, but what is yours?
I mean, for me, I'm always a big fan of letting things naturally weather. It's one of the reasons why I prefer to have as much aluminum on my hero pack as I can. Mm-hmm. Just because if it's already made out of metal, any paint that's on there is going to weather very naturally and look way better than if you go over the edges with a silver Sharpie kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's something that I've done is I've probably maybe gotten a little too heavy-handed on times with some rub and buff, but I've, you know, and that's caused me to have to go back over it a couple of times. But, you know, yeah, I like that. That's totally different, though, from a Q-Pack to maybe a hero where you've got a shell and you've got a bunch of metal parts.
Well, I mean, it's all comes down to personal preference as well, how you want your pack to look. Chris has taught me about the Omni-Pack, which is a specific look of a pack where it looks brand new and shiny. People are using, like, the satin spray paint, so it has like a sheen to it, which is correct for that specific pack.
Yeah.
And then like there's people who my pack specifically in some circles that they don't like my weathering at all because they want theirs to look old and dusty, like it's been in the closet. Mine's just looks like it's used, like it's clean but like chipped, and they don't like a lot of ghost heads don't like that look. They want it to either look super nice or super old looking. So it's but it's all personal preference on what you want your pack to look like. It's also terrifying because doing weathering on a pack to make it look old is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And if you mess it up, it's a lot of work to undo it.
Right. Right. Yeah, I kind of had run into that because, you know, you mentioned that you have, Greg, an 89 pack, right?
Yeah.
I am in the process of building another pack. This one, I think I'm probably going to keep more of a, I don't know, maybe something will, you know, come up and bite me where I want to go ahead and get, you know, Magnoli to get me another flight suit, make it a GB2. But this 89 pack that I'm building is, as of right now, more of a wall display. But I may have gotten a little too heavy-handed when it comes to, like, the Vallejo dust, the pigment. And because I wanted it to look a little dusty and rusty in some places. And, well, now it kind of looks like it got thrown around in some dirt and just came off of the dirt farm. But I, you know, it's not bad. But you are right. Yeah, going back and taking some of that off, that's kind of a pain in the ass.
It's just a process. You learn every single time you do something, you get a little bit better at it. And that's the misconception about the community, I think, in general, is somebody wants to go right in. And you, by all means, go right in, but it's going to be a slow process. Chris has built, like, what, 4 of these packs already? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've helped him build one, and he helped me mod my other one. Like, it's, you get better with each thing you do slowly. It's not going to be an overnight thing, and it is overwhelming and it is expensive. It's exactly why they call it a hobby, right? That's the whole point. You're not going to build a whole pack in 2 days. I mean, maybe somebody can out there, but it'd be very expensive.
I mean, you probably could theoretically if you already had every part that you need in hand already, but that's just getting the parts is such a long-term sort of project.
Yeah.
Like, let alone putting it all together.
Right. Do you guys think that social media has made people more critical about builds than they used to be?
No.
How so? How so?
Back in the day, you know, before it really took off on, like, Facebook groups and, like, Reddit and stuff like that, it was just GB fans. That was really the one big place where you would go and, like, look at and discuss people's Proton packs. And people are, you know, GB fans, the forums have kind of a reputation for being very, very, very critical of people's Proton packs. And, you know, justifiably so. It is, they are very critical. Not necessarily, like, negatively critical, but they are very, like, oh, you say you're going for this particular pack, but this detail and this detail and this detail is wrong. And really what they're trying to do is they're trying to be helpful and help you correct, you know, what you may have missed yourself. But people who are a little bit more thin-skinned about that sort of thing, you know, it definitely gave the place something of a reputation for being extremely hyper-detail-oriented on these props.
It's also like there's different kind of demos, subgroups in these groups, right? Like if you walk around and you're claiming your stuff is screen accurate, you know, Chris will show you what's not screen accurate. There's nothing not screen accurate on your pack, right? And also subcategories of groups where people just want to make the pack their own. It doesn't have to be screen accurate. You don't have to lose aluminum parts. It doesn't have to be the right color tube, and it can be whatever you kind of want it to be. And I think that's where, like, the fandom, like you said, how social media kind of helps. Like, people get to show their packs from all spectrums. Their spirit packs, their hero packs, their in-between packs, their custom packs. Mac has that super heavy aluminum thing. Like, that's insane. That's cool, but it's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Matt? Yeah, yeah. Matt's aluminum pack is bananas.
Yeah, he was telling me the story about how he went to go meet Sigourney Weaver, and he was standing in line for nearly 5 hours wearing this all-aluminum pack. I couldn't imagine having to do that for that long. That hurts my back thinking about it. And here I am worrying about, you know, this plastic pack that I've got. But there's always something out there that's you know, a little heavier than what you got. So, you know, use it wisely. So let me go into this. When you are out and you're seeing all these different packs, where do you personally draw the line comparing to your own? Like, this matters, or this is overkill?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, I try. So the thing is, like, and especially more recently working with Aaron Mack, Max Factory.
Yeah.
You know, I try to keep in the back of my head of, like, You know, I know a lot about proton packs, but there's still a lot that I don't know about proton packs. And there's always going to be, there's always a bigger fish, right? There's always going to be somebody out there who knows a little bit more about it than you do. And you might be going in with this preconceived notion of it being one way, and you could be completely, completely wrong. And I feel like every interaction that Greg and I have with Mac is kind of like that. Where I think it's one way, but I am very wrong about it.
So how do you handle it when somebody in the community critiques your build, especially when you know it works in the real world and how it works?
It's interesting because the stuff that I've seen just in general on social media and in person is that like people aren't really, it's not really a critique. Like people are trying to look and see what you did, how they did something. Oh, I did it this way. We did it this way. Like that kind of stuff. I've seen ion arms made of wood instead of aluminum. You know what I mean? Like it's just it's the way people handle different projects, whether it's a budget thing or they knew how to woodwork and didn't want to pay for aluminum or whatever. I think that's like where the fandom really kind of comes out. It's not my pack is better than your pack. It's my pack is different than your pack. Or how is it different? And that kind of just gets the conversation going and how everyone kind of becomes friends in a group of Ghostbusters you've never met before until today.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, there are different ways to get conversations going, and it's not about, you know, being critical, but you know, when it comes down to it, you're right. It is, what did you do? How did you do it? So as part of a team, do you try to standardize builds, or is everyone kind of doing their own thing?
I would say everybody's kind of doing their own thing. We actually, one of our members has like a very, very customized pack to the point that he has like several more modernized pieces on it that are, in my opinion, kind of a really cool take on it. Like, Garen has that, has a PC case fan instead of a heatsink on the side of his wand, which I think is the coolest idea. Like, I really like that. And it is fully functional. I mean, it turns the electronics on, the fan fires up. It has, I think, blue lighting on it or something like that, you know? So it's just kind of a neat, very different approach to it. And then, you know, as far as the overall group goes, like, I think all of us who are builders in NorCal try to be just very supportive of each other and like, oh, okay, so this is what you want to achieve. How can I help you figure that out?
That's cool. I mean, that's, you know, this community is really, it's small. It's everybody kind of seems to know everybody, but that's where having that friendship is good because, you know, you get to share those ideas and maybe those different things that you didn't really think of that you're just like, oh man, I think I got to go back to the pack. we got to do something here. So let me ask you, what is something that NorCal Ghostbusters does differently that you think other groups could learn from?
Oh gosh, that's a really good question. We're on the West Coast. It's hot out here. We don't wear pants under our flight suits. No.
yeah, we don't need the red jacket. We don't need the red jacket for Prison Empire. It's hot 10 months out of the year here. Don't need that.
No, I think really it's just kind of having very, very minor standardized details. So, like, I think we all have the Spangler and Reitman, like, memorial pins on our lapels. And, like, just, like, very, very small touch stuff like that. And then, you know, having certain things worked out ahead of time within the group. You know, a lot of the pictures that you see of us as a group, if you go on the NorCal Ghostbusters Facebook page, a lot of the pictures that you see of us as a group, we're ready to believe you pose. And that just kind of happened naturally. But it's just one of those little details that it's like when you're working with the group, you're out an event, people are asking for pictures, you know, you want to have a certain poses and certain things worked out ahead of time, basically.
So for somebody trying to join a group like yours, what matters more? Is it the gear or the attitude?
I think attitude.
Attitude.
Because we'll help you with gear. You know, I practically have everything I need to build another proton pack out in the workshop right now. So it's like, you know, if that's what you need, we'll help you with that. But like,
that's cool.
You know, yeah, it's pretty satisfying.
Just to know that you could walk into a shop and see everything to do that, I imagine it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's, no, Chris's workshop is amazing. It's a great location to shoot at, and it's super well lit as well. But no, like, and it's interesting too because I know each chapter, there's different. I would say like requirements, like some are super strict and some are like super lax. Like, but most of the ones that I've reached out to and talked to is that just, they just need to have a uniform. And like some of them are like, it has to be this, or some of them are just like, just have a uniform, period. Just have some type of a jumpsuit. That's all you need. Right.
Yeah.
Or if you need help making one or find out where to purchase one, do that. I was going to mention in the Magnolia segment, like he does a payment plan option, interest free. So if you don't have $350 up front, I mean, you email them and they work out like a payment plan over a period of like, you know, 6 months or whatever, which is kind of nice.
That's right.
See that in a small company.
That's right. They do have that. And yeah, again, that's a great way for somebody to, if they're dead set on screen accuracy and they want to get as close as possible, but they just may not have the funds up front. And, you know, let's be honest, a lot of people don't. $350, that's a good chunk of change right there, you know, depending on which suit you're going with. The deluxe, in my case, yeah, that's a great option. And it's cool to see that people in the community and in this hobby do offer things like that. So is there any other place that you'd recommend people go to if they're working on their first pack, or maybe they got a spirit pack that they're trying to upgrade? Where should they first start? Is GB Fans going to be the go-to?
Yeah,
as far as information, I mean, you know, Etsy is another really good source, especially these days. There's a lot more sellers on Etsy who are doing different sort of parts packs for different grades of Proton pack, especially if you're talking entry level packs.
Quality-wise, like Max Factor is a great resource.
Like
his site is so incredible. Like Aaron does amazing work, and it's top notch. But the problem with top notch work is you're paying top dollar for it, but it's worth every penny. His stuff is expensive, but my God, is it amazing! It's so well crafted and meticulous and screen accurate. Like he was telling random facts that I just never knew about the movie. To me, when I'm having conversations with them about stuff, like I didn't realize that it was this way. It's like, oh yeah, it was that way forever, but I do it this way just in case. And I have these alternate ones if you want to do it 89, 84, Afterlife. And I'm like, okay, wow. He's so knowledgeable. And also, like, he's super responsive on his Facebook page. So is AJ. If you have a problem with your order, like AJ, I don't know if he answers questions. He might, but like, if you have a problem with your order, he'll handle it. Not a problem. If you have a question about your order, I'll handle it. Aaron is really active on his Facebook page. GP Star, super active on their Facebook pages. Like, if you have a question or problem, there's a ton of resources. Our Discord, like, we have people in our Discord from all walks of makers. You can ask a question there. We have Dragon Chris is in there. Hunt Chris.
Yeah. We actually have
GP Star. Like, yeah, there's resources. You just got to dive in.
Most of your interview guests so far are in our Discord server.
That's awesome. Yeah, because
talking
about how many people are out there trying to do this and do it on their own, they really don't have to be alone, because if you got, say, a hub like, you know, the NorCal Discord server, that's a great starting point. Or GB Fans, for example, that forum that has been around for ages. There's a whole group of people out there willing and wanting to help you.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And one of the jokes in the server is that, like, my secret superpower is just networking. I think one of the guys the other day was joking about how, like, I'm a walking whoyougonnacall.org. And I'm like, you know, I'll take it.
When it comes to somebody looking to be in your group or looking to take part in the NorCal Ghostbusters, what is it that you look for that is maybe more than being just a buster?
I mean, gosh, that's another hard one to really put my finger on. Because, like, I mean, just love of the franchise overall,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, like, the love of Ghostbusters in general, just enjoying every aspect of that show and or movie and the gear and everything like that. Like, that's the big one.
Because we all have different entries, you know, into the franchise, too. Like, you know, there are people who got into it because of Answer the Call. You know, it's not, you know, I'm sure there are people who are going to be booing me for saying that, but it's true. And it's actually kind of true for me as well. Like, I wouldn't have built my first Proton pack if it wasn't for Ghostbusters 2016.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't really give it the time of day, and they don't really maybe understand what it was supposed to be. But you're right. It did. It brought in a whole new group of people, be it, you know, maybe they're just dead set on trying to stay as accurate to 2016, but they may have branched out and they're like, maybe they hadn't seen, you know, the original movies before, and then they got into it. I think that that's the cool thing about this franchise, is that especially with Afterlife and then Frozen Empire, it has brought in, I've noticed, a lot of younger people. Is that something that you've seen too?
Oh, yeah. It's every time that there's a new entry into the franchise, it's just like a fresh infection vector for more new fans to come into the cosplay side of everything as well.
Yeah, that's one of the neatest things. And going back to talking about how you got into it, and maybe there were different avenues of what you did, I've seen, you know, Greg having his Magnolia suit being the real Ghostbusters. Was that yours, kind of? Was that your entry point to it, the cartoons?
I am what, like 2 years younger than you, Greg, if I remember correctly? Three?
Yeah, I'm 40.
Yeah, two. So I was just a little bit young for real Ghostbusters. I don't get me wrong, I watched it when it was originally airing in the early 90s, but yeah. Like I was like 4 or 5. So I was into it, but it definitely wasn't something that stuck with me. Until a little bit later, and I got a little bit older and was watching the movies and everything. And then Extreme Ghostbusters happened, and I was the exact right age for Extreme Ghostbusters. That was like the real infection point for me.
Yeah, I had a blast watching that as a kid, and it's so funny going back now, because I feel like watching some of these episodes, I'm like, oh, I think I remember what I was doing at that point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's so much fun. Now, if someone has zero experience and they want to build, say, their first pack, what is the smartest way to avoid getting overwhelmed?
Mod.
Oh,
mod.
Yeah, well, that's another one of my, like, one of the pieces of advice that I always give to people, like, is, like, you know how to eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? So learn the anatomy first. Everything is going to be much, much easier for you, especially further down the line, if you already speak the lingua franca, you know? So if you already know what an HGA is and what the booster tube is and what the difference is between the filler line and the beam line and all of that. Like, that's going to do so much more for you than, trying to just jump in and order a bunch, you know, one of everything.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I was in that exact situation, which is what's interesting, because I'd always been a huge fan of the show, but I'd never built any gear or done anything. I was just a fan of it. And I met Chris late 2020, I think, Chris, or 2021.
Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, so like I had commissioned a pack from No One's Designs as like a reward for myself, because 2020 sucked ass.
Yep.
And I got it, and I was like telling a friend about it, and Casey, one of my friends, and he was like, oh, have you ever met Ghostbuster Chris? I'm like, Ghostbuster Chris? Who's Ghostbuster Chris? And they're like, oh, he's just a guy who likes Ghostbusters. And I think I reached out to Chris on Facebook, and we met at a coffee place, and he showed me his pack, and it just was kind of like the friendship started there. And then we started doing Ghostbuster coverage on my day job stuff together. I brought him on as a guest. And then I kind of got more and more into it, learning more and more about it. And then I got the HasLab, and Chris is like, do you want to mod it? And I'm like, oh, no, I want to keep it as a collectible. And like, as I went to more and more shows, and I saw like how kind of, as Chris started to open my eyes about more of the details about screen accurate stuff and real parts and that kind of thing, I started to see the cracks in like the collectible. I'm like, you know what, let's do this. And we started small. We started with like an Alice frame and a motherboard. And then that became, now we got to do the side power cell panel. Now we got to do new speaker. Now we got to do a board swap. Now we got to do cosmetic updates, real wires. Now we got to do aluminum parts. And it just kind of like, and for every mod that we did on it, I got more confident to do the next one, until the point where, but just by chance, Chris and I, we found like a shell in Sacramento that one of our members drove to me. And it was like, it was a complete shell with a motherboard and an Alice frame for like $150. Like, to give you perspective, just the shell, if it was still available now, would cost you $500.
Oh my God.
So we, by chance, we got that, and I was pitching to Chris. I was like, hey, like, we have this shell and we're wrapping up all the mods on the HasLab we've been doing for the last 2 years. Do you want to like do a hero build? And Chris was like, fuck yeah. And that's basically
it. Rest is history.
Yeah.
Being in California, do you find it, I mean, obviously you're up in Northern California, do you find it easier to get parts for your pack, or, you know, like, what was it? What did they use in the movie? Apex Surplus down in LA. Do you find it easier to get stuff there? Maybe because a friend of a friend knows someone, like, hey, man, down the road, you know?
the hell is Apex Surplus?
Apex Surplus.
That should tell you everything
was,
right there. What the hell is that?
Apex was the supply house that a lot of the little fittings and electronic pieces were acquired at by Stephen Dane for the original packs.
I learned something today.
See, just nerd talk. There you go, Greg. Just nerd talk. It's okay.
it's interesting because it's like we also know that the prototype, the original prototype, Stephen Dane built out of leftover parts from the Blade Runner shoot.
Oh,
which
wow.
Is, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's cool. See, again, I'm learning something too.
Yeah. Well, that's like I was saying earlier. There's always a bigger fish, right? There's always somebody who knows a little bit more about this than you do. And like, I don't know everything. I just know a lot of things.
I like that. I don't think it gets any better than that. So what are you both chasing right now? Is it better builds, new tech? Or are you just kind of enjoying what you put together so far?
Well, we finally wrapped Greg's hero pack, and we should have the last few parts of the how-to series on that coming out here in the next probably month or two.
Yeah, the last two parts. There's two more parts left to edit. It's electronics and details, and then that's everything. 13 and months and nine parts.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, nine easy steps. So next up is going to be my Frozen Empire pack. So I've had a Frozen Empire pack gestating pretty much since Frozen Empire came out, and I've been slowly but surely acquiring every part that I can that is either a direct replica or sourced from the same source that they used on the film. And in some cases, I actually working with Dragon Workshop with Chris Hunt, we identified a part of the Frozen Empire pack that nobody else had identified yet, and we got to name it, which was really cool. I'm really looking forward to getting that pack going.
That's going to be awesome. There's so many different places where we can catch you guys. Where can people find more about NorCal Ghostbusters?
NorCalGhostbusters.com. If you aren't already familiar with it, we're on YouTube, youtube.com/Gregors85, GREGORS 85.
There you go. And can people get into the Discord from the main link on the website?
Yeah, we have all the Facebook, Instagram, all our links on that top of the About Me stuff should be on the YouTube channel.
Perfect.
Our Discord too. Facebook too. It's really easy to find us and message us places. Just stop asking for patches if we don't know.
Yeah. Please stop asking us for patches. We don't
can't
have
give you
any.
Patches, people. We can't. Not unless you're an official member of another chapter, we cannot.
Even then, we don't have any to give away.
You guys, I'm a fan. I appreciate what you do. You guys have been putting a bunch of stuff out there for the entire community, and I hope people go out, they search NorCal Ghostbusters, they find out what both Chris, Greg, both of you guys do. And they hopefully become a part of it and get this community building some more packs. I appreciate you both. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, that was Chris Nance, Greg Burke from the NorCal Ghostbusters. And I think what really stands out about that conversation is the difference between building something that looks good in photos and building something that actually holds up when you're out there wearing it, moving around, and putting it through real use. There's a level of practicality that doesn't always get talked about in this hobby, and hearing how they approach builds, uniforms, and even the whole accuracy conversation from that perspective, it grounds everything a bit. At the end of the day, this isn't just about chasing perfection, it's about building something you can actually use, enjoy, and be proud of. That's what Bench Tested is about. If you got something out of this episode, appreciate you being here and taking the time to listen. We've got more conversations coming up with builders, designers, and even people across the community, all from different angles of this hobby. We're just getting started right here on Bench Tested.